Good morning, everyone. This morning we're reading from Bathsheba, lesson 48. Why do we practice Ahimsa? Our basic beliefs as Saivite Hindus naturally inspire us to practice Ahimsa, or non-injury. Because we see God everywhere, we feel a deep closeness and affection for all beings. We would never want to hurt that which we love and revere. Knowing that God is in every person, every creature, everything bestows an attitude of sublime tolerance and acceptance. We reject the idea that some people are evil and deserve to be treated badly. People do act in evil ways, but deep inside they are all divine beings. They are experiencing a difficult part of their evolutionary path. The second belief behind Ahimsa is the law of karma. We know that any hurt we cause others will one day return to us. Being aware of this basic principle, we wholeheartedly practice Ahimsa, refraining not only from causing physical harm or violence, but also from hurting others with our words and our thoughts. Such gentleness gives rise to respect, courtesy, and appreciation for others. Non-injury is the product of spiritual consciousness. Hurtfulness arises from lower instinctive consciousness: fear, anger, greed, jealousy, and hate. It is based in the mentality of separateness, of good and bad, mine and yours. We never retaliate. It is wiser to accept the hurt as self-created karma and respond with understanding and forgiveness. To retaliate would only perpetuate the karma. However, Ahimsa does not mean pacifism. We may defend ourselves to protect our life or the life of another, or turn to the police who are authorized to use force. And we support our country's use of military force to safeguard its citizens. Ahimsa is also a powerful tool for changing and improving society and government. Gandhi proved this with his civil disobedience movement, which freed India without resorting to fights or force. Ahimsa is called the Mahavrata, the great vow. Among all the yamas and niyamas, it is the most important virtue. And Gurudeva's quote, "It is good to know that nonviolence speaks only to the most extreme forms of forceful wrongdoing, while Ahimsa goes much deeper to prohibit even the subtle abuse and the simple hurt." Ahimsa is a challenging word to pronounce because it has a long A at the end. You want to say Ahimsa, right? That's the English way of saying it, but it's Ahimsa. That A at the end is long. As the text points out, there's two beliefs that are the basis for Ahimsa. And in looking at that, it reminded me of the Tirukkural, which approaches many subjects in three ways. The first way it approaches something is, high-minded people just do this. So if you're high-minded, you do it. And there's no logic given. It's just, this is what culture, religious people do, such as Ahimsa. Then it gives a reasoning basis, how it benefits you. So in this case, obviously, if we hurt someone else, the hurt's coming back to us. So reasonable people don't hurt others because they know they're going to get hurt back. So that's like a step down from just doing the right thing because it's the right thing. And then sometimes, but not always, he puts a little fear in there and he says, boy, if you do this, you're really going to suffer. That's for the low-minded people that, you know, unless you really paint a negative picture, they're not going to follow this principle. So he speaks to three different levels of mankind in many chapters. So this is speaking to two levels. It's saying, it's the right thing to do because we see God in everyone. We wouldn't want to hurt anyone. So it's the right thing to do. And the other is the law of karma. We don't want to harm someone because we know then we're going to get harmed in the future. So that's illogical. And then as Rudeva points out in his quote, what he's saying is usually when we think about harming people, we shouldn't harm others. We think about actions, or harming someone for our actions. But Gurudev is pointing out that Ahimsa is more subtle than that. It's threefold: actions, words, and even our thoughts. So I'm not going to go into thoughts this morning. That's one right in it. You know, that's a topic in itself. How can our thoughts harm someone else? Well, they can, because people feel them. But I'm just going to talk about words. So in fact, words are the way that the individuals I generally relate to would end up harming someone. You're not going to go around hitting people. I don't have friends who go around hitting people. Devotees who hit people. But sometimes they get upset and harm people with angry words. So that's the way that usually ahimsa is not being followed. It's through words. So we'll come back to that in a minute. Continue through the main ideas in the lesson. An important idea is not to retaliate. In some some traditions, some family traditions, in some sense of what's right and wrong. If someone does harm to us, we have to do harm back to them. That's just the way things are done around here. You wouldn't think of getting injured and then not retaliating back. It's unthinkable. But of course, in the principle of ahimsa, what are we creating? We're creating an endless cycle, right? Well, he does something to me, and then because of that, I have to do something back to him, and then that person has the same belief. I've been hurt, so I have to retaliate, and this could go on for quite a while, right? And in fact, they still make movies based upon that. It's a theme that never dies away, retaliation. Oh, it's not taking into account two things. Obviously, the law of karma, that if you harm someone else, you're going to get harmed back, and if you believe you have to retaliate when you get harmed back, then you've created an endless cycle. You're just stuck forever. But it's also ignoring a very important point is, why did you get harmed in the first place? Because it was your karma to get harmed, because you harmed someone in the past. Everything that happens to us, positive and negative, we attract. But we're not accepting that principle of the retaliate. We're thinking this person did something to me. We're not thinking I did this to myself. But that's a wiser way of looking at it. Everything that happens to me, I caused by what I did in the past. As you've heard me say before, we have a big magnet in us. It's like a big magnet. Whatever happens, we're attracting it. Good and the bad, we're attracting it. Why? Because of what we did in the past. That's what creates the nature of this magnet. It's attracting based upon what we did in the past. If we can really see that, then we realize, well, if that person hadn't done it, somebody else would have to. Because it's going to happen. I'm destined to have this happen to me. And to blame the person who is the instrument, the vehicle for the returning of my karma is very short-sighted. In fact, I know one devotee who likes the idea of thanking people. Thank you for bringing my karma back to me. Thank you very much for mistreating me. Now that karma is done, and as long as I don't retaliate, it's gone. Really takes it to the extreme. Very nice way. So don't retaliate. Well, what do we do if we don't retaliate? We need to use the proper channels. So in school, for example, there are individuals. The principal is obviously one person, but even there are others in the system of the school that are set up to you're supposed to report the misbehavior to them, and then they handle it for you. You don't just go and retaliate if people are mistreating you all the time in school. You need to use the channels that are set up. And likewise, in the community, we have the police. If we're getting seriously mistreated, then we need to bring in the police. And the police are different than an ordinary person in that they've taken an oath. There's an oath the policeman takes. I have to behave this way. I can use violence in certain circumstances, etc. And if they don't follow the oath, they end up in trouble themselves. They don't have just carte blanche. They don't have freedom to use violence however they want. They've taken an oath to correct situations in a certain way. And because they've taken that oath, they don't create a karma as long as they follow the oath. So it's a very interesting way that controlled violence can be used by someone such as a policeman without creating karma. Patanjali Yoga Sutras has an interesting section. Verse 34, chapter 2. Unwholesome deliberations, such as harming someone and so forth, whether done, caused to be done, or approved, whether arising from greed, anger, or infatuation, whether modest, medium, or extreme, find their unending fruition in ignorance and sorrow. This is why one must cultivate their opposites. We're saying a couple of important points. The first one is, you don't have to be the person to do it, to get the negative karma. If you incited someone else to do it, then you still get the negative karma, as well as they get it too. So if you're involved in any way, done, caused to be done, or approved, even if you just approve it, I want to do this negative act, approved. You've taken on part of that karma. And the last point he mentions in the previous verse, cultivating the opposite. I'll read the previous verse. For the repelling of unwholesome deliberation, one should cultivate the opposite. May not be self-evident what that means. For the repelling of unwholesome deliberation, one should cultivate the opposite. In speech, in the principle of ahimsa, which is what we're talking about, the action we're trying to, the unwholesome deliberation, the action we're wanting to avoid is harming someone through our speech, right? That's what we don't want to do, harm someone through our speech. So what's the opposite? Helping someone through our speech, right? It's obvious. If we don't want to harm them, the opposite of harming is helping. We're benefiting them. There's a couple of, I like them because they're very poetic verses in Tirukkural, chapter 10, speaking pleasant words. Verse 100. To utter harsh words when sweet ones would serve is like eating unripe fruits when ripe ones are at hand. A ripe mango is much nicer than an unripe mango, right? We can all agree on that. So who would want to eat the unripe mango when the ripe one is sitting on the same plate? But that's what we're doing if we choose harmful words. Another verse. Why would anyone speak cruel words, having observed the happiness that kind words confer? Oh, in Gurudeva's teachings, as we know, the speech needs to pass a fourfold test. We all remember that, right? Speak only that which is true, kind, helpful, and necessary, right? True, kind, helpful, and necessary. And then if you want to remember it, you take the word think and you drop the I, so you have THNK. True, helpful, necessary, and kind. And one of my ideas, which I've written about a few times, is we can also put the I back in, which makes it the whole word, in terms of a guideline for speech, and add a fifth guideline. Which it goes along with the idea of speech that is helpful. It's trying to give a guideline. Well, what constitutes helpful speech? So the I is for inspirational. When it applied to speech, it refers to speaking something valuable and uplifting, which motivates the listener to bring out the best in himself or herself. So we want to help the person by inspiring them, encouraging them. So Gurudeva was an expert at that. He was always speaking words to encourage rather than discourage, words to praise rather than criticize, and words that emphasize that we can succeed rather than we will fail. Those are the qualities that inspirational speech involves. We're encouraging, not discouraging. We're praising, we're not criticizing. And we're giving someone the confidence that they can succeed rather than making them feel they won't succeed. Interesting, an interesting way to think about that. Inspirational speech. It's the opposite of harming someone. Is one form of helpful speech. It's not the only form of helpful speech, of course. But it's a form of helpful speech that fits into Patanjali's idea for the repelling of unwholesome deliberation. One should cultivate the opposite. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.